Good morning. Pleased to see everyone this morning. Desire your all's prayers, as always, that the Lord would allow me to get the thought he has given me out. Appreciated the songs this morning. Was thinking of the faithfulness of God. Thinking of the special that was just sung about, you know, take it to the Lord and leave it there. He's trustworthy. And part of what I want us to think about, have we ever considered Christmas and how old the Christmas story really is? How far back does Christmas really go? We tend to think of Christmas as, well, the time of Christ's birth. And that is a point on the Christmas story. But I want us to look at Christmas with a little bit different view this morning. The thought on my mind is the light of the world. Because that's really what the Christmas story is about. The light of the world. I want to start off reading in John chapter 1, starting in verse 1. It says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not." So we see here, the Gospel of John starts off talking about how Christ is the Word from the beginning. With God, from the very beginning of time, before you could say time existed. And his life is the light of men. And it was going to shine into darkness. And it also said there in the fifth verse, "And the darkness comprehended it not." Now we think of the word comprehend, meaning darkness couldn't understand it. But that same word is often used to imply that the darkness can't overtake it or subdue it. So if we look at it this way, the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness had to give place. The darkness had to flee away. And with that in mind, I want us now to go all the way over to Genesis chapter 1. And let's consider now how the earth starts. "In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, let there be light, and there was light. And God saw the light that it was good, and God divided the light from darkness. And God called the light day, and darkness he called night, and the evening and the morning were the first day." Have you ever thought about that parallel with Jesus' birth, Christmas? That the very first thing God did on earth was create light and separate it from darkness. It's the very first thing he did. And how do you separate light from darkness? Has anybody ever taken a flashlight, you shine it into a dark room, and where does the darkness go? It just goes. You turn on a light switch, and the room just fills with light. Darkness leaves. When God set up light that we see with our eyes, do you realize it was a foreshadowing of his Son and what would happen when the spiritual light came into the world? That this Christmas time is actually a time for us to ponder, how long has the Christmas story been going on? It was the plan from the beginning that we would have a Christmas. Because soon, as the year goes on, as we go into next year, we'll celebrate Easter. But you can't have the Easter without the Christmas, without the light coming into the world. And if you think about the darkness fleeing, some people say, well, you can go in a room and it can be very dark. It can be very dark if you shut all the light out. That's the only way you can stop light from getting places. We look around this room. How many of y'all see shadows in this room? How many of those shadows are absolute darkness? They're not. Why? The light reflects. And even if there's a light there, if I put my hand here, there's a shadow. But there's still light getting around. Light has to have its way because God said, I'm going to separate you from darkness. You and darkness can't exist together. If there's light, the light will have its place. And I want us to consider that the beautiful faithfulness of God from the beginning of time, before he created land, before he created the animals, even before the sun and the moon and the stars, the first thing God said is, I want to make sure everybody understands light is separate from darkness. And the light will win. The light will rule. So now I'd like to take us into Luke. Luke chapter 2, starting in verse 8. Now this is going to be reading from part of I actually had to chuckle at some of the memory verses this morning. Y'all will hear those verses again. Luke chapter 2, starting in verse 8. And there were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them. And they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. Ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angels multitude of heavenly host, praising God and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. And it came to pass, as the angels were gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds said one to another, Let us now go even unto Bethlehem, and see this thing which is come to pass, which the Lord hath made known unto us. And they came with haste, and found Mary and Joseph and the babe lying in a manger. When they had seen it, they made known abroad the saying which was told them concerning this child. And all they that heard it wondered at those things which had been told them by the shepherds. Now this is, I find this story with the shepherds quite intriguing. The shepherds were out keeping their flocks at night. The shepherds were keeping their flocks in darkness. Now there was probably natural light from the moon and stars, as we know, is out there. But then the Lord sends something to them, an angel. And it said, the glory of the Lord shone about. Do you see another pattern of light into darkness? And why shepherds? Why did why not go proclaim this to the priest in the temple? Because that way it would have surely set a solid mark that this is the Christ child. Wouldn't that have made sense? But I like the fact that it went to shepherds first. If we think about the story of Abraham, Abraham was called to leave his homeland, to leave the place he grew up in. And what did Abraham do? He wandered around in Canaan as a shepherd, didn't he? That was what he did. He had his flocks and he wandered around grazing and raising flocks, raising his family. Have you considered that Abraham was called to be a shepherd? And even when God was dealing with Abraham, and Abraham asked him one night, Lord, you've come back to me again. You've given me a prophecy that I would have seed, the world would be blessed, but all I have is this servant that's going to inherit from me. I love the Lord's response to Abraham. Because it says he brought Abraham out of the tent, and to me that's just a wonderful thought. Can you imagine the God of the universe willing to come down and for all practical purposes get inside a tent with Abraham to talk with him, to commune with him? And then Abraham asked the question, but Lord, you gave me a promise. And I love Abraham asking that question. I don't see it so much as a lack of faith, but it shows that Abraham was pondering and studying on the word of God, what he had. He didn't have the scriptures as we had, but what he had was what the Lord had told him. And he had apparently hidden that word in his heart. And he's sitting there pondering it. And the Lord came by. Said, I want to talk to you. I see you're pondering my word. And Abraham says, yes, I got a question. You said I'm going to have a son, but all I have is this servant. And the Lord to show Abraham what was going to happen, the Lord took him out into the dark and told him to look up into the dark night sky and said, see all those points of light? See all that light in the darkness? See the multitude of stars up there? All of that light shining in darkness? That's your future. That's your seed. That's the hope of mankind. Light shining in darkness. Have you ever, I don't know how many of y'all have traveled. I've had the privilege of traveling to different sides of the planet. You know, just about, unless the clouds come in and obscure it, you go out at night, you know you see stars. No matter where you go on the planet. Unless there's enough city light, you can't see them. But if you go out and you look up into that darkness, God has put the stars up there. You think about some other shepherds. We think of Joseph that went down into Egypt and his family. Weren't they shepherds? When Joseph brought his family into Egypt, how did he introduce them to Pharaoh? These are my family. They're cattlemen. They raise sheep. They're herdsmen. We think more about shepherds. Moses. What was Moses doing when he saw the burning bush and was called to lead the people out of Egypt? He was herding his father's sheep. And then what about the shepherd David? How did David learn to trust the Lord? Was it because he went and studied in the temple? Or was it because while he had been a shepherd, dealing with the hardships of what it is to be a shepherd, having wild animals come attack your flock, God had showed him, if you'll trust me, I can help you protect that little flock. And so here we see God once again shown light into darkness. And this time, instead of taking it to who you might think the leaders of the land, he took it to the shepherds, to I'm going to call it the common people, and said, this is not a message to an elite group of people. This is a message to everyone in the world. And I love the shepherds' reactions, because it doesn't say that when the angels left, they said, huh, do y'all believe that? Do you think we should go? But instead, didn't the shepherds say, you know what? We're going to go see this thing that we're told. It's there in Jerusalem. We're going to go see this baby. They said it would not with a air of question, but with an air of expectation. This baby is here. This light that's shined dispelled the shadows of their disbelief. The light that says will not stay with darkness, when it shined on them, they absolutely understood and handled themselves correctly and took off to see the baby. Now I want to go next to Matthew chapter 2. Matthew chapter 2, starting in verse 1. This is the story of the wise men. It says, now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem, Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem, saying, where is he that is born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and are come to worship him. When Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he demanded of them where Christ should be born. And they said unto him, in Bethlehem of Judea. For thus it is written by the prophet, and thou, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, art not the least among princes of the Judah, for out of thee shall come a governor, and that shall rule my people Israel. Then Herod, when he had privily called the wise men, inquired of them diligently what time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and search diligently for the young child. And when you have found him, bring me word again that I may come and worship him also. When they had heard the king, they departed, and lo, the star which they saw in the east went before them till it came and stood over where the young child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. And when they were come into the house, they saw the young child with Mary his mother, and fell down and worshipped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented unto him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. And being warned of God in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed unto their own country another way. Now, these three wise men, as they're called, the word in the Bible is actually magi. And it's a person that specialized in the study of astrology and enchantment. Also known as enchanters or magicians. And the reason why I want us to ponder that, these three wise men, we would probably consider to be in total darkness if they were trying to practice magic. We'd be like, these people are hopeless. Their minds are darkened. And yet God had shined a light, hadn't he? God had somehow put a light into the darkness of what they normally would search for, to where these magicians were looking up into the stars of heaven, looking for ways to predict things, to win people's trust. And they said, we see something. Now, we don't have a whole lot of record on what they saw, but we do know they saw something that whatever they saw and whatever they studied on, they said, this is the sign of the King of Israel being born. Enough that they actually left their homes and traveled to Jerusalem, the capital of Israel, to ask. We want to meet the child. We saw a star. Does that sound like men that didn't believe a child had been born? You know that darkness of disbelief? When they looked up and saw that, it was gone. They traveled into a foreign country wanting to meet the new king. Once again, the Lord had shown that where light shines, darkness leaves. And so now they're in there talking to Herod, and he didn't have the light, did he? And he had to go ask other people, when is Jesus supposed to be born? When is the Messiah supposed to come? Where is he going to be born at? What's the prophet say? Oh, Bethlehem. Told the wise man, and we know in hindsight, because we have the scriptures, told them with a little nefarious purpose, oh, by the way, once you found him, come back so I can worship him too. We know how that story went. They were warned and they didn't come back. But consider those magi, those men that we would say were the furthest thing from people that would be worshiping God, yet somehow the light of God shone all the way down to them through their minds, and all the darkness of what they dealt with, and they understood this is a sign of the Messiah. And we want to go meet him. Now, considering that sign of the Messiah, let's go back to Genesis. If we look at Genesis 1, chapters 14 and 15, and talking about how long God has had things in position, if you will. Genesis 1:14, and God said, let there be lights in the firmament of heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years, and let them be for lights in the firmaments of the heaven to give light upon the earth. And it was so. So even back when God was building the earth, he told man, there's going to be times you're going to look up and see a star, and it may not just be purely to give light on earth. It might be. That's one of the things listed. But there's times you're going to look up and see a star, and it's there for a purpose. It's a sign. Something I put in place. Have you ever considered the rotation of the stars around the planets around the sun? Do you realize that every clock we have is based off of that? The way the earth turns. Our whole concept of time comes from the movement of the bodies in the firmament. And God had said, that's what it's for. It's for timing. It's seasons. We're in a cold season now. Pretty soon spring's going to come. How many of us have ever worked on farms? And you know, when you start seeing certain things, it's time to start getting fields ready. You got to go start getting the fields ready. You're going to be planting soon. And then at the same time, and later on in the year, it's time to start getting ready for harvest. But isn't it also interesting how God set points of light and darkness as a way to guide and direct man? Now, considering the prophecy that these three magi, we say three. Do you realize there's not actually a number in the Bible for the number of wise men? The three has been linked, I think, more to the fact there were three gifts. But there is no actual number. Some of the information I've read has had some of the ancient traditions saying there's been up to 14 of the kings or magi that came along. But when the magi came, they had something, though, some prophecy or something that was telling them there's something happening. And I want us to turn to Numbers 24, verse 17. Now, this is a prophecy of Balaam. And I know Balaam, if we all recognize the name, he's the prophet that was hired by Balak to curse the nation of Israel. And yet he couldn't. Because whatever his affiliation with the Lord was, to me it seems uncertain. I wouldn't want to have to try to judge. He obviously could talk to the Lord. He understood that he was only to say what the Lord told him to say. But he wasn't an Israelite. He was not of the nation or tribe of Israel. He was a foreigner. The reason why Balak had gone to him, Balak had said, I've noticed that who you curse is cursed, and who you bless is blessed, and I want you to curse this people. I'm going to hire you to curse these people. And I think the fact that Balaam was willing to entertain being hired to do that says that there was definitely something in his heart that didn't truly understand God. But this was a prophecy of Balaam at the end of that. It says, I shall see him, but not now. I shall behold him, but not nigh. There shall come a star out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel, and shall smote the corners of Moab, and destroy all the children of Sheth. Now, this is a strange prophecy. I shall see him, but not now. I shall behold him, but not nigh. He's saying this is a prophecy for a time to come. This is a prophecy that's not related to what I'm dealing with now. This is not for what's coming now. This is down the road. And he says, there shall come a star out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel, and shall smite the corners of Moab, and destroy all the children of Sheth. Now, Sheth is another name for Seth, one of the sons of Adam and Eve. And a lot of the folks that look at that read that as shall destroy all the children of Sheth, or shall subdue all of the children of men. And there's some that wonder if it was a prophecy like this from outside of the Bible. Now this is in the Bible, but a similar prophecy of somebody that had contact with God, and God had shown them that those three wise men had looked at. Because no doubt, when Balaam spake this, his other prophecies, everybody around Balaam, he had a reputation of what you say comes to pass. And no doubt this saying, we have it recorded in our Bible. Others might have recorded it as well. Well, if it's for a future time, how do we know? When will we know when this comes to pass? We don't know the answer to that, but what we do know is that the Lord God on his throne was able to show to those wise men from a land to the east, it said, that here's this prophecy coming true. The light is shining and the darkness is gone. Now, I also want us to look at some verses here. Isaiah chapter 9, verses 1 and 2. Nevertheless, the dimness shall not be such as was in her vexation, when at the first he lightly afflicted the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, and afterward did more grievously afflict her by the way of the sea beyond Jordan in Galilee of the nations. For the people that walked in darkness have seen a great light. They that dwell in the land of the shadow of death, upon them hath the light shined. Now if we go to Matthew chapter 4, starting in verse 12, we see this prophecy once again of light and darkness and the shining tied to Christ being fulfilled. It says there, starting in verse 12, Matthew 4, 12. Now when Jesus had heard that John was cast into prison, he departed into Galilee. And leaving Naphtali, he came and dwelt in Capernaum, which is upon the sea coast in the borders of Zebulun and Naphtali. And it came that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by Esaias the prophet, saying, the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, by the way of the sea beyond Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles, the people which sat in darkness saw great light, and to them which sat in the region of shadow of death, light is sprung up. The one thing that to me has always been so wonderful about the Christmas season is it was the leading up to the culmination of the very plan that God had from the beginning of time. The gift he had for mankind of saying, I'm going to make a way for your disobedience, your rebellion. I'm going to make a way for that to be taken care of. There's going to be a price you can't pay. But as a loving father, I've already set aside, if you will, funds to cover that. So that if you're willing to come to me, I can pay it for you. You don't have to do that. Isn't it wonderful looking back across time and realizing that the God of heaven, when he created man, he didn't create man on a whim. He didn't create the planet and plan this out on the, maybe they'll love me, maybe I can save them, but I really don't know what I'm going to do if, pick some scenario. God had sat down and said, okay, if I give man a choice, if I give him the true ability to love me, do you realize that's what choice is? Choice is that ability to say no. And so to say yes, you're that's true love is willing to say, I am going to say yes to you. I am going to show you I love you because I don't have to. I'm doing it because I want to. And the very God of heaven said, I'm going to make this man in our image, and I'm going to give him this ability to love, but it also means he's got the ability to choose. And this ability to choose could be used unwisely. And he said, now, if I do that, how do I get him back on the right path? How do I make sure that an unwise choice doesn't forever separate us? God is a God of love, not hate. Light and darkness don't mix. Love and hate don't mix either. If you're around a person that claims to love and yet hate somebody at the same time, chances are you're around somebody who's, I'm going to say, in a relationship that's soon to be over. Because just like light and darkness don't mix, love and hate don't really mix. One will win. If you choose wisely, it would be love. But hate can win out. The hardness of man's hearts. But God, in his wonderful mercy, was looking down through the ages and, you know what, I'm starting with light. I'm going to make sure light wins over darkness, that light always dispels darkness. That's how I'm going to set it up. You can't go into a room with a darkness flashlight, turn it on, and fill the room with darkness. There is no such thing. God has set his rules, the laws of physics, and I often chuckle at the fact that mankind refers to them as the laws of physics. This is the way things work. You don't expect them to do anything different. This is the way it is. Laws of physics says you turn on light, you've got light. Darkness isn't there anymore. I'd also like for us to take another quick look in Luke. Luke chapter 1. Verses starting in verse 76. Now this is Zechariah, you know, John the Baptist's father, and he's making a prophecy here. Now the prophecy is in regard to his son John the Baptist, but look at what he says. And thou, child, speaking of John the Baptist, shall be called the prophet of the highest. He's saying you're going to be the prophet for the Messiah, for the one coming. Thou shalt go before the face of the Lord to prepare his ways, to give knowledge of salvation unto his people by the remission of their sins, through the tender mercy of our God, whereby the day spring from on high hath visited us, to give light to them that sit in darkness and in the shadow of death, to guide our feet into the way of peace. Even Zechariah in his prophecy to his own son said, you're going to go before the Lord. And the Lord's coming here, remission of sins? Notice that called out? The darkness in your life? Gone. Why? The day spring. And so that the people in darkness can see. Isn't it wonderful that the Lord cares for us enough that even though he knew Easter was going to come, he was willing to give us Christmas? Give us the light so that we could see that, yes, Easter looks so dark, so terrible. The Lord crucified. But I heard it's a secular song in the world, and a friend of mine had his car radio going and had it on a Christian radio station. And in the song, there's a man, he's supposed to be on an airplane flying somewhere, and in the song, he's talking with a fellow passenger on the plane, and the guy sees he's reading a Bible, and he's like, yeah, you know, I'm reading the Bible. He goes, yeah, I've heard that story, you know, he is born, he lives, and he dies. The end. And the man on the plane says, oh, no, you misunderstand. That's just the beginning. Because, you know, the darkness did not conquer Christ. It may have looked like it. In fact, even the earth itself got dark for the space of about 3 hours. It looked like with that death that the light that was brought through Christmas looked like it had been extinguished. But then what happened 3 days later? That light came out and is untouchable. It can't be conquered. It's already set for eternity. The light of Christ is finalized. The words were, it is finished. Not turned off. Finished. The plan's in place. I just wanted to share this with you all with going into Christmas for us to just remember this time of year is a very positive time of year for us as regards to just remembering that the wonderful love of God was given to us so that we could know his Son and so that we could, through that, be reconciled with the Lord and live eternally in the light of heaven. No darkness there. It's a beautiful thought for me. I hope you all enjoy it. Y'all pray for me.